We live in a fast-paced and hectic world where it's easy to feel overwhelmed, stressed, and out of control. How do you manage all the competing pressures without losing sense of yourself? How do you stay focused enough to not only plot a path, but follow it? Welcome to Recovery Road, a show that offers inspiration, insight, and intelligence, as well as success stories from many walks of life that can show you how you can control your own destiny. Our knowledgeable and entertaining host and her guests give practical advice that you can use every day in the quest to master your life. Now, here's your host, Leah Mattinson.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's episode. I'm host Leah Mattinson, and thank you to each and every one of you who've joined us from wherever it is that you are on this beautiful planet today. If you're joining us for the audio podcast, thank you so much for sharing with your friends far and wide. If you're tuning in to masteryourlife.ca, you're going to be able to catch us on the video version, in which case you might say, where the heck are you people? I've been booted out of my regular office and I'm now staying in a, it looks like club bedroom, but it is where we're broadcasting from today. And I'm joined this week with guest Alex Schadenberg. Alex is the executive director of the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition. And I wanted to have Alex on today. He's been doing this for a few decades now, and I wanted to have him on today to talk about this very anti-human agenda that seems to be at play throughout the world. So, Alex, welcome to the show today.
Great to be here. Great to be here with you. As so you Alex, can see, I'm not in my office either. So you and I are the same right now.
That's right. Down to earth, having a down to earth conversation.
That's it.
So you've been doing this since 1999 and you've authored two books or three books?
I've authored, two books for under this topic. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And then several videos, technically four, but under this work, three, under, you know, Euthanasia Prevention Coalition three. Yeah. So I've been busy for many, many years on this issue. That's for sure. And I've been speaking everywhere. Like I've done speaking engagements in everywhere in Canada, almost every state in the U.S., and then throughout Europe too. So Australia, New Zealand, all those nice places, for some reason, called on Alex to come speak.
Yeah, well, because there's, I think, a lot of hearts that are being broken by this early exit of human beings from the planet. So again, I'm excited to have you on the show. You've been doing this since 1999, the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition Executive Director. And you also operate the world's most comprehensive blog on these issues related to euthanasia and assisted suicide. Yeah. And your articles have been published worldwide. The reason you came across my radar was because I came upon your blog. And in the Huntington's disease community, which is part of the communities I'm involved with, there's this is a very big topic, assisted suicide.
Yes,
and also I'm a grandma. And so the grandmother and the conversation about people taking the lives of babies early through abortion, et cetera, just like it seems so abhorrent to me that I can't even address some of these things, you know, just it actually stops me from speaking. Talking, it's just like I stutter on my words when people are talking about taking lives early. And so again, it's very important to have guests on who don't stutter over their words, who are clear about, you know, what's going on. So what is going on from your experience? And this is not a belief. This is actually what is going on, because you've been doing this a very long time. So what's going on in this world where we think it's okay, or we've got this idea that it's okay to leave early or take somebody's life or encourage people to do that?
Yeah, because when we're talking about euthanasia in Canada, so what we're actually talking about is taking somebody's life. Somebody might have requested it, but it is being done by a doctor or a nurse to another person. So it's done by lethal injection, lethal drugs. It's not assisted suicide is what is legal in the U.S. And assisted suicide is when they give those same drugs, but the person has to take it themselves. The reasoning behind it is the same as euthanasia, just the way it's done is different. But nonetheless, you're right. This is about taking life. Some people like to call it see it as a suicide. When I look at it a little different, because someone else is directly involved with causing that death. And right off the bat, that's what I've always said is wrong. You should never have in a law someone else doing this. What's happened is it's gone a bit crazy worldwide. And one of the reasons this is that sort of the taboo early in the morning here, and the taboo to killing has been erased. So over time, it becomes more and more acceptable. For the average person, the average person's reacting to the concept of, I don't want to suffer. You know, right? They're saying, Uncle Joe, he had a bad death and I wouldn't want to have that death. Or they heard that somebody had a bad death and they just a fear of suffering. And I can understand that as a human person. I can understand that completely. Obviously, suffering is, in my opinion, something that we can deal with properly with good social and medical care. People don't have to suffer that way. Nonetheless, the fact of it is that killing people has become the answer for some. And to me, that's a serious, serious problem. Because how do you actually control that in the end? It's very difficult. But I'm going to go one step further. You have a social society that's broken down in some ways. Now, so in the past, you had a lot more family support than you would have today. You had a lot of, social integration, or what I would say, human connectedness that has in many ways broken down. That changes the cultural attitude then. What happens then is that a lot more people are living lonely lives. Mm-hmm. They're living lives in isolation of others. And if you're philosophically believing that it's okay to have someone kill you or okay to cause death, and now you're going through a difficult time and you're lonely, you might think that death is the answer to your situation. Whereas in reality, what the answer is social integration, good care, taking care of somebody. A true death with dignity is not about lethal drugs going through a bloodstream. A true death with dignity is about people caring for you and you dying naturally with those around you either who love you or who are caring for you. That is a good death. That is a supportive death. That's a death that reaffirms your humanity. And that's what this should be really all about in our culture, but it's gone the other way. We have a radical secularization also. So one of the things that happened with euthanasia is they said, oh, well, that's a throwback from the past and something wrong with that. When they legalized euthanasia in Canada in 2016, what they did is they actually created an exception to homicide in the law. So if you look at the language of the bill, what did they actually do? They amended the Homicide Act in Canada's criminal code. That's how they actually did it. It's the same in the Netherlands. They created an exception in their criminal code. So it says, it's a murder, first degree, second degree, manslaughter, and it has all the definitions. But then there's the exception. The exception is euthanasia. You requested it. Doctor agreed your life wasn't worth living and doctor injected you. Well, you can be all modernistic as you want, but creating exceptions to homicide are not necessarily a great idea. This is not an idea that's going to make you think, oh, that's progressive. In fact, what it does is it puts certain people at risk to other groups of people who now have the power to cause your death. And I also describe how the law works. Because of the fact, if you actually read the laws, no one reads the laws, eh? What happens is we're sold slogans. Even politicians, when I was talking to politicians, most of them had not read the law. They hadn't read the bill. And you're talking about, the bill says this. Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. No, what they were doing is they were sold slogans. So why would you even look at the language of the bill when you bought into the slogan? The slogan is, death with dignity. We're going to eliminate suffering. Isn't it terrible that people like Schadenberg are going to force people to suffer? And of course, I don't want you to suffer. I've got no interest in your suffering. I just don't want others to be involved with killing you. And I don't want there to be a law that says it's okay for someone to kill me. But how the law actually works is it gives the doctors and in Canada nurses the right in law to cause your death. That's what it does. And if you think, oh, don't worry, Alex, there's oversight of the law. I'm sorry, there's not oversight of the law. How the law says, it says the doctor must do A, B, and C, or the doctor and nurse must do A, B, and C. And then it says, oh, but they must be of the opinion that you fit the criteria of the law. Of the opinion. I'm of a lot of opinions. I don't know about you, Leah. I'm of a lot of opinions.
It doesn't make it right.
Yes. Well, that's right. It doesn't make it right. But on top of it, that means there's no actual oversight of the law. If I were a physician and I killed you, and it was really, really questionable whether I should have ever done that, all I have to say if I'm questioned is I thought you fit the criteria of the law. I was of the opinion you fit the criteria of the law, and I'm good to go. You can't do anything to me. And that's, of course, what's happened in the Nichols family. When Alan Nichols died, they demanded an investigation. They could not believe that their brother Alan died by euthanasia. They couldn't believe it. Alan went through depression all of his life. This was in 2019. He died at the Chilliwack Hospital. He was he was brought into the Chilliwack Hospital because of his, he was so deep in his depression at the time. The police brought him there to protect him. He requested death. They took it as a request for euthanasia. They approved him. He died by euthanasia. But he wasn't sick. He wasn't dying. He was going through what he had gone through all his life. You know, he was up and he was down. He had very deep times. He had very good times. And this was, there was nothing new for Alan. This was nothing new for Alan. The only difference was is that some doctor saw that as being a reasonable request, approved it, another doctor signed off, and he died. And they were looking for an investigation. They demanded an investigation. The RCMP did an investigation and came back saying, oh, the doctors were of the opinion he fit the criteria of the law. Well, I could have told them that that would be the result because that's what the law says. So it doesn't matter if the doctors did something that would be considered seriously wrong. I think it was a homicide. Anybody else looking at it from the outside would say, that looks like a homicide to me. Yeah, it does. Absolutely. But nonetheless, it doesn't matter because it fits within the law. Absolutely.
So what's the advantage to the medical people who are involved in this? Like, why would anyone agree to do it?
Well, I think the law was designed to actually protect them. So, you know, agreeing to do it has to do with a lot of a philosophical point of view.
Right.
There's a lot of doctors who have, they've been trained in a different way than the past. So when they say, oh, how could doctors do this? Mm-hmm. Isn't there something called Hippocratic medicine? Isn't it about doing no harm? That was the argument. And I always said, well, that, you know, the do no harm, the whole Hippocratic oath left medicine a long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. And some say, oh, that was because of Christianity. You can't have a Hippocratic oath. That was a Christian thing. Hippocratic oath was not a Christian thing. Hippocrates was not a Christian. He lived way before Christianity. All Hippocrates was saying is that doctors who have the power to kill are very dangerous. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to set up a group of doctors who don't kill. We will promise that we don't kill you. We won't, even if you ask for it, we won't kill you. And what happened is that became so popular that that became the root of Western medicine. Western medicine's whole history is carried by Hippocratic medicine. Yet Hippocratic medicine is gone now. We should be concerned about that, actually. But you also now have philosophers like Peter Singer. So Peter Singer is one of the world's leading, if not the world's leading philosopher of the day. And he absolutely believes that there's certain lives that are not worth living. So when you're taught these things in med school and philosophy classes that, you know, it's actually inhumane that certain lives are continuing to live or that we haven't offered them death, that when you, what happens is it changes the mindset of the person, that it stops being that all human life should be cared for and should be protected. And we're not opposed to dying, of course. We're all going to die. But right. It's like it changes from that to some lives are not worth living. And the problem with that is once you start actually killing, then what happens is then it starts becoming a situation where you start proselytizing it. So I get these calls all the time. I literally get these calls all the time of people who are upset. I got a call from one of our supporters whose husband was quite elderly. She was quite elderly herself. And he's approaching death. And she calls me up. She's saying, how do I get the doctors to stop asking my husband about MAID?
Oh,
well, that's ridiculous. Her husband was not interested in MAID. Her husband is interested in dying a natural death and trying to be comfortable. Yes, he is interested in good care. He's not interested in MAID. She's like, every time a new doctor comes in the room, they start bringing up MAID, and it's like they're going to start filling out the checklist to approve them for MAID. Well, it's ridiculous. They start proselytizing it because they look at someone and they say, oh, I wouldn't want to live like you. Maybe you should have MAID. You know, that's how ridiculous it gets. I got a call from a woman that was last year. I got a call from a woman. And she was all upset because her husband had been approved. He was asking for MAID, but this was something that would have never, ever, ever, ever fit his belief system. She says, we're Christians. We've always been opposed. He would never have said, please give me euthanasia. You know, he would have never said that. And then what happened is that she didn't realize what was going on. She just didn't realize. She was just calling me up. How do I talk to him? So we discussed for quite a bit how to talk to him, how to. You know, talk him out of this decision. And sure enough, she was successful in that thing. Thank right. goodness she was. But nonetheless, she found out after he died a natural death. She found out after he died that this nurse at the hospice came up to her and said, oh, yeah, yeah. I had been speaking to your husband a couple of weeks ago when he was really at a downtime. And it was in the middle of the night. It was like between 2 and 4 in the morning. And he was just all upset. And I was speaking to him and I gave him comfort. Because I explained to him that MAID was probably the best thing for him. And he was resistant. But after our discussion, he agreed that maybe MAID was the best thing for him. So now she realizes why he was asking for MAID, because when he's at his low time, and nothing personal, being human, we do get to low times. Mm-hmm. He's convincing him that MAID's the answer. Why would she think she has to proselytize MAID to some guy? What he needed, he was going through a normal human response, right? He's got a life-limiting condition. He's probably going through some difficult times. He's having different emotional, psychological, maybe existential distress. These are all normal things to be going through. Talking to him is not a bad thing. Obviously, though, proselytizing MAID, why would you do that? It's so interesting because this woman said to me after her husband had died, well, she's fortunate he didn't die by MAID, because if he had, I would have made such a stink about it. Mm-hmm. And the fact of it is that's exactly it, because she had proselytized that. That's just not necessary. Why do they do that? Because obviously, in certain times, you may not look like your life is worth living anymore, but I will always acknowledge that your life is worth living until its natural end, and we can care for you. And caring for you makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah. And so what is the difference in belief, or where does that come from? You say it's not Christian. Is it like, what is it where people go, it's not okay to take your life? Or it is okay to take your life?
Well, I think the world is radically secularized, right? So but the problem with this postmodernism, and it's not even postmodernism anymore, it's like post-postmodernism now, is we reject everything from the past. And so they're saying, well, that's from the past, Alex. Your ideas are from the past. I'm like, being opposed to killings from the past. Well, then I'm getting concerned. I'm getting quite concerned because, obviously speaking, my own life then holds in the balance if you think it's okay at certain times to kill me. My own life is now threatened by your philosophy. But what it is they've just rejected everything from the past. They think that everything on the past is either coming from a Christian past or a funny belief system. We've rejected all that. Everything's up for grabs today. Well, the problem is there are certain things that fundamentally connect us. And it's just simply crazy to start thinking that it's okay to kill you. You created now an exception to the law in Canada and in the Netherlands and a few other countries that say it's okay to kill people under certain circumstances. Now, okay to do this. We're not talking about war, which is self-defense. And we don't have to get into that. It's a whole other topic. But the fact of it is now we're saying it's okay to kill. Well, why isn't it okay to kill then in other circumstances? And the other problem that comes up is now it becomes harder. And let's say there's a murder. There's a husband kills his wife. And then they start saying, oh, well, she was sick. Well, why are you creating an exception for a husband killing his wife? Now, I understand there may be mitigating circumstances which would say that, you're not going to give him 25 years in jail because he was depressed, he wasn't himself. There might be many mitigating circumstances. I'm not going to argue there aren't. But why are you going to start giving reasons why now it was okay that he killed his wife? This becomes very concerning. Someone killed their child. Well, that child had a disability. So now it's okay to kill the child. Well, that child had a disability. Mm-hmm. Well, come on. What are we now saying about people with disabilities? If I were a person with a disability, I'd be very concerned. And that's actually how I got involved in this issue, was through the disability issue. Right? I have a son who's disabled, and when he was a little boy, we were getting involved in the disability community. And you start realizing, oh, okay. So what they're saying about the social context of people with disabilities being treated differently, different attitudes towards them, how when they get older, they feel threatened by society, that they have to demand medical treatment because it doesn't seem to come to them willingly, that there's certain discrimination built into the culture about disability. It's true. Sorry, it's true. We'd like to think of ourselves as progressive and wonderful, nice, caring people. And many of us are very nice, caring people. But some of us have built in ideologies that don't fit that at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz. Part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Well, and so flash forward now, how old is your son?
Oh, well, he's now, what, 27 or something like that. Yeah, so it was a long time ago. I've been doing this work a long time, you know, so.
But can you imagine? I want people to think about that because when you have little ones that are quote unquote not normal, and not only is it you, it's the culture around you that questions whether or not they're normal.
Well, because it's a different type of normal. It's just like, how we should be looking at it. But anyway, yes. The fact of it is that there are clear attitudes.
Mm-hmm.
And battling for someone with a disability to get access to a proper education. I'll give you a prime example. When our son was going to enter secondary school, they told us that he should just be in a disability program. And we're like, well, no, he will graduate from high school. He can do that. Might take him a bit longer, but he's intellectually capable of doing that. He's got his difficulties. He needs supports, absolutely, but he could do it. And they were saying to us, you know, we spend all our time having to convince people like you that their children are not going to be able to graduate from secondary school. Well, our son graduated from secondary school and he graduated from college. So come on. You know, the fact of it is that's discrimination built in. And yes, it was a nice lady telling us that. Yes, she was a super nice lady. But, she had built-in disability discrimination, yet she was the one, the teacher who was in charge of the disability program at the high school.
Right.
Like, give me a break. So, nothing personal. Give me a break. And then they say, oh, well, you're just blowing this out of proportion. Well, you know, I wish I were.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I were. So.
Mm-hmm. And Alex and I haven't met prior to this interview. So those of you who are longtime listeners to the podcast, you'll know this is near and dear to my heart because I moved home to take care of my ailing father. And it was just, he was diminishing from having Huntington's disease. And I was shocked, I guess, that when I thought or considered in the last couple of years that if he went into care of any kind, nobody would be able to see him. Like visiting him would be right out because of the whole COVID shenanigan-a-fest. So there's people dying by themselves in hospitals, not seeing their families. And I just looked at my awesome dad and said, that is not happening to you. And so I moved and took care of him. And it was, I think that people who are, when we're dying, it is not necessarily that pretty, you know? So it's like we go through life thinking everything's supposed to be pretty and, you know, pretty and slick. And that's not actually what it is. It's very human. And as a result of that experience, though, I was closer to my father. I had more respect for him and for my mother as well, because they were both like working there, really, really trying to be healthy as they possibly could in very challenging circumstances, but being absolutely 100% certain that no one was going to be taking anyone's life. And so because that's off the table, we're bad at making decisions as humans, but when that's actually not even part of the discussion, it's just, we're going to live every day fully. We're going to do the best that we can do. We're going to try to get along with one another. You know, we're going to love one another. We're going to be grateful for things that's actually, you don't have conversations that are exhausting. So I feel so sad for that poor lady that you were discussing that her husband was being whispered to in the middle of the night. Cause that's exhausting to actually enter.
Exhausting. It was emotionally, psychologically exhausting to her. Like it was a terrible experience for her.
And for her husband.
Yeah. And she wasn't the only one who's experienced that. Like you're telling me about these situations. I got a call from this was during COVID. I got a call from a woman who was absolutely upset because her mother had dementia and her mother was in a nursing home. And she went in every day to feed her mother, every single day to feed her mother. Then COVID broke out and she was denied entrance to the nursing home. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, I wanted to take my mother out of there, but I just couldn't arrange it. And then COVID, and they wouldn't allow me access to her. 2 weeks later, her mother had died. Her mother died of dehydration and malnutrition. That's what her mother died of. Because obviously speaking, she needed someone to sit there and be patient and talk to her and feed her. Mm-hmm. Now, her mother had late-term dementia, or, you know, people would say, oh, well, you know, Alex, you know, she was going to die anyway. Well, I'm not going to argue that she was going to die anyway, because guess what? I'm going to die anyway someday, too. I'm also not arguing that she didn't have dementia. She did have dementia. I understand all that. But it doesn't matter. She was an important person in this woman's life. She was her mother. Mm-hmm. She loved her mother dearly. She was willing to care for her mother. And yet this is what happened. You know, and that's just the tip of the iceberg of these stories, you know, that we get. We get people calling us all the time about these things. I'm talking to this woman, and she's telling me that her brother-in-law was asking for euthanasia. And I said, well, why is, you know, so your brother, this is his wife still alive? Oh, yes. Well, you know, why didn't his wife call me? She said, well, she's so distraught by this, she can't talk to anybody. So I'm talking to you. How do we convince him not to do this? And, you know, the problem with the law is, of course, you have no rights. If your husband or your wife decides they're asking for medical aid in dying, you have no way to intervene. You can't try and stop it. We had that case in Nova Scotia where the wife had contacted us, but her husband, who was approved for euthanasia, she's saying, my husband's incompetent. Sorry, he's incompetent. How could they have approved him? She says, the only reason at first I was sort of saying, oh, yes, you want to ask for medical aid in dying, let's go through the process. It's okay. She says, because I was sure he was going to get turned down because he's incompetent.
Right.
And then, of course, we helped her go through the courts and everything. And in the end, the judge has said, well, there's nothing we can do about it. There's nothing that can be done about it, because the law doesn't even give any space for the court to intervene on any of these cases. Even if the case were totally wrong, the law only requires, you know, a doctor or a nurse and another one to sign off. So it takes two people to approve it. And that's it. Done. It's over. It doesn't even matter if there were three or four doctors to say no along the way. As long as two said yes, it's good. And that's what had happened in Nova Scotia, and that's what was done. And she was saying, you know, he's given away, you know, half of our money. He's done all these things. He can't remember where he's going or what he's doing. He's completely incompetent. If you talk to him, he seems cogent. But when you actually dig down, you realize he's not at all. And yet he died by euthanasia, and that was considered acceptable. And she was just distraught about that, too. You know, these are the realities of living. Once killing is okay, well, then it obviously seems to certain lives are worth, it's okay to die. Now, you may ask, well, what's going on now? Well, now we're talking about minors, okay? So they're saying, well, you know, it's okay to have euthanasia, so why don't we have minors dying by euthanasia? Well, you know, there's a lot of factors to minors dying by euthanasia. First of all, they're not adults. Secondly, there's questionable capacity and competency. You know, the brain doesn't quite develop properly until you're at least 25. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that, you know, you should delay driving until you're 25, even though when you look at the roads, maybe it's not a bad idea. But I mean, the fact of it is that now you're going to allow euthanasia for, you know, 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, 13-year-olds, and that's okay too. The other thing is they're saying, well, what about people with dementia? So, you know, in the very beginning, they sold this to people in Canada as it would be competent adults who are capable of consenting and who consent at the time of death. So they're saying it's not going to be all these other cases. And of course, that was just a stepping stone. That was just a way to get you used to killing. So once it's okay to do that, well, why not this other group? And then you look at the person with dementia and you say, oh, well, I wouldn't want to live like that. So, you know, they may never have asked for it. They might not even have been on their list, but now they're going to be talking about how to develop rules around euthanasia for dementia. They're saying you should be able to put it in your advanced directive. So I'm a healthy guy. I'm doing my advanced directive. And I say, oh, by the way, if I have this, this, and this, please lethally inject me and get me out of this, off this earth. Well, you know, I might feel totally different at the time I'm actually having that situation. Let's say I had a massive car accident. I might feel totally different about my life then. But once I've put it in my advanced directive and I'm considered incompetent, I'm not allowed legally to change my mind. They had the case in the Netherlands, which made that even become more clear. It was what we call the coffee euthanasia case. What it was is a woman with dementia, and when she was competent, she had put in her advance directive that she would want euthanasia. But then when the doctor was asking her about it, she would always say, no, no, no. She made the comment also, that sounds a bit extreme to me. This is the kind of thing she's saying to the doctor when the doctor is bringing up euthanasia. The doctor, of course, was bringing it up because it was in her advance directive. That's what she wanted. So finally, the family decides, okay, on this day, we're going to do the euthanasia. The family and the doctor decide. So they come, and the doctor says to the woman, well, remember, she's got dementia. The woman, doctor says to the woman, well, today's the day we're going to do euthanasia. Well, what's that? You know, well, we're going to give you an injection, and you're going to pass away, and you're going to die peacefully. And she's like, no, no, no. Like she's fighting back. She's saying, no, no, no. So the doctor put a sedative in her coffee. Doctor, so because obviously if we sedate her, then she can't say no, no, no. And then what happened is then he's got her all set up for the euthanasia, and she's semi-sedated, but she's not completely sedated. So now she's resisting. So the doctor had the family hold her down. As the doctor injected her, she died. Now, what happened is that ended up going through the court system. And because obviously there were questions about this. At first, the euthanasia committee dealt with it and said, it's outside of the rules, but we'll say it's okay. That's a great clock, you know, you can't miss the time. Anyway, if you're watching this later, you'll know exactly what time it is by listening to the clock. Oh, you can see it now, anyway.
East Coast. Anyway.
So anyway, I'm getting, well, this will be done in 1 second. It's a very homey talk anyway. So what happened is that then it was prosecuted and it went to the court system, ended up at the Supreme Court of the Netherlands. And the judges said, well, she wasn't capable of changing her mind. Therefore, what was done was not wrong. Hmm. Now think about it. Here's a woman with dementia. Now, anybody else would say that is a homicide. Clearly, that's a homicide. It couldn't be anything but a homicide. But she had asked for it in her advance directive several years earlier when she was still competent. So therefore, she's not competent to change her mind. Therefore, it was fully acceptable what they did. You know, these are the kind of things. Now they're talking about euthanasia of infants, infant euthanasia. You know, and really now what we're talking about is really eugenic euthanasia in a huge way. Not to say that other cases aren't as eugenic. Do your listeners know what I'm talking about when I say eugenic? Because, you know, the sad thing is, the word eugenic has been lost in the English language.
I think it would be good to do an education piece about it. Yes. So let's talk about
it. So eugenics, we associate eugenics with the Second World War, but that's an error. It just happens that Hitler believed in eugenics. So therefore, the elimination of people with disabilities what they did is they put them in psychiatric hospitals and they gassed them to death. Mm-hmm. And they killed, minimally speaking, 70,000 people with disabilities in the Second World War. And you would say that the Nazi euthanasia program, they believe actually it was much higher than that. They really, at the estimates, go closer to 200,000 to 300,000. But, you know, the records aren't always perfect about this.
Right.
Nonetheless, they would say, yes, but we're not Nazis. I'm saying, yeah, but eugenics was not about Nazism. Eugenics came before then. It's just that Hitler liked eugenics. In fact, Hitler used eugenics to kill off Jewish people because he considered them to be an inferior race. So when he's talking about an inferior race, what he was saying is, he believed that it was good to eliminate these people because they weakened the gene pool, so to say, or they were less than human, as he would describe them. So that was a eugenic belief, even though, of course, it was totally hideous in every way, everything they did. But as I say, eugenics is not Nazism. Nazism accepted eugenics. So this is eugenics when you start believing that there's certain lives not worth living. You start believing that it is better that we eliminate a life or that that life not be allowed to live. You know, because A, they're concerned about the gene pool, but B, they're concerned about this new concept that was added to eugenics called human happiness. So you, as I mentioned, Peter Singer earlier, Peter Singer is a eugenicist, even though he's very popular. People have divorced the concept of eugenics to him, but he's exactly a eugenicist. He talks about that if you have a child born with spina bifida and you don't want that child born with spina bifida, then it's okay within 9 months to decide whether or not you want to keep your child. You know, why does he say that? Now, some say he's changed his teaching to 3 months, and now he says it shouldn't take 9 months to decide. We'll give them 3 months to decide. So his more recent writings are about 3 months, so whatever. The point of it is it's okay to kill them. The parents should be able to decide, he says. And he talks about it as being about human happiness. The good life is about being happy. So if something lessens the level of human happiness, then it's not a good thing, that it's better not to have it. And then, of course, he says you can have happiness anyway because you can have another child, he explains, in those kiss situations. It's like craziness. I'll kill one child, but I'll have another child. We'll all be happier now. Right. The fact of it is that we're saying that these children born with certain conditions, that it's out of caring and love, we should end their lives. Dr. Heidi Jans is on my board of Euthanasia Prevention Coalition. And if you Google her, you realize that she's got a, she's an amazing woman. She's a playwright. She's written many things. She's produced videos. She's got her doctorate. She teaches. Yeah, she is very significantly disabled, incredibly significantly disabled. And she was since birth. And as she says, if it weren't for her parents, she wouldn't be alive today. Because, you know, when she was born, the doctors thought, why would you provide any treatment for this child? Because this child need a treatment to live right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Why would you provide treatment for that child? Just allow that child to die. You know, just, you know, we don't have to kill. That was the idea at the time. You know, just leave them and they will die. And of course, your parents were like, no, we're going to care for that child. We're going to love that child. We're going to bring that child home. Well, you know, if you met Heidi, she's happy, vivacious, fully alive in every way, shape, form. But she has a very disabled body. Yes, absolutely. The problem with this comes also with what happens to the culture when it's okay to kill people, because it changes us. You talked about your humanity when you cared for your dad.
Yeah.
You know, caring for people in need makes us human. Now, someone would say, yeah, but your humanity shouldn't force us to make somebody else suffer. And I'm like, well, wait a second. I didn't say anything about suffering. I don't believe you should have to suffer in such a way. And I don't believe that your dad was suffering because you were caring for him. I believe it was you bring him happiness and joy to have his daughter there caring for him. And, you know, then some of these things are more difficult. There's no question about it. But it makes us human. We become human when we care for others. I think our society has become very cold and calculated. Yeah. Cold, yes. And calculated. Oh, you have this condition. Well, you know, we don't have to help you. People with disabilities who are contacting us saying, you know, like I was talking to this woman in British Columbia and she had been approved for MAID. And so I contacted her on Twitter because she had an article about her that was published in a Vancouver newspaper. And she was all upset that she couldn't get medical treatment, but she had no problem getting approved for MAID. Right. And so, you know, I contacted her by Twitter and she doesn't want medical aid in dying. She doesn't want euthanasia. She's not interested in it at all. But she's saying, I can't live like this. I'm in pain all the time. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, I can't seem to get treatment that others are getting. I don't understand why. All they give me is some analgesics and that doesn't do it for me. It's not enough. And she's got a degenerative neck, right? So she's got health issues that are related to the degenerative neck. And she says, you know, I could go to the U.S. with $100,000 and go to the U.S. and get the surgery. And, you know, that will at least relieve my pain that I can live. But they won't give it to me here in Canada.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer, life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And then we got talking back and forth on Twitter, back and forth. And then she says, well, you know, I think my problem is I'm autistic. She says, I'm an autistic person. And doctors don't deal with me normally because I don't react normal to them. Mm-hmm. Like as you might react or as I might react. Mm-hmm. Like it's her normal, right? It's like my son, Peter, he doesn't react the same way as you or I do. Right. And so she's saying, I think that's probably why I'm not getting the treatment because they're, you know, when I'm there talking to me, I don't make those type of reactions. I don't talk to them. I don't, you know, look and respond in the way somebody else might do so. And she says, I think that's my problem. And I'm thinking, yeah, so what we need to do is fight harder for your care because it's ridiculous. It's insane. It's insane that you are suffering like this and what you need is surgery and they won't give you the surgery. It's insane. And she's like, I can't wake up in the morning like this any longer. So, you know, maybe MAID is my only answer. But you know, what's even crazier about this is everyone's listening to this. They've been saying, well, she qualifies for MAID, doesn't she? She's asking for it, doesn't she? She doesn't want it. What's more insane is the fact that she can qualify for MAID without a problem, but she can't get the treatment she needs to live a good life. That's what's insane. You know, I was talking to a guy in Niagara Falls area, and he was also in a newspaper. That's how I first heard about his case. But then he goes and contacts us. And it was really weird. He had a mutual friend who said, you got to talk to the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition. So he contacts us. I'm talking to him. And what is he saying to me? I don't want to die by euthanasia. Now, he had a back condition. For 18 years, he's had a back condition. A lot of people have back conditions. So he's in a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. And he says, and I can't get the surgery I need. I've been fighting for the surgery and everything's backlogged. It's way backlogged. Everything's really, really backlogged. So I'd have to wait a few more years before I get my surgery. And he says, yet I can't sleep at night. I'm in total pain all the time. He said, I've been approved for MAID. He says, if I can't get treatment, I'm gonna die by MAID. He says, no, I don't want to die. He says, I don't have a death wish. I'm not seeking death. I want treatment. Same thing, same idea. Oh, but surgeries have been backlogged a few years because of COVID and the rest of it. So he's out of luck. So the answer is to kill him. I think it's craziness. I think we've gone through a craziness within the culture that's gone beyond. And they would say, oh, well, there are cases, Alex, that we would support. You know, and you should support those cases too. And I'm like, no, those cases we could deal with caring for somebody. You know, in the case of your dad, people would talk about Huntington's day and night saying that's a good reason for euthanasia.
Yes.
But the fact of it is you gave him excellent care. Mm-hmm. And it made you a better person. It made him die a complete death. Like, you're talking about death with dignity. Having someone love you and care for you is a death with dignity. I'm sorry to say, that is the true death with dignity to those who think that killing is the death with dignity. This mm-hmm. is not.
And I think that there's lots of lots of people who it's expensive to take care of people. It's expensive. Right. Yeah, we're broke. We can't take care of people. We don't have the money to take care of people. We can't stay home to take care of people because it's too expensive to take care of them. And so that's kind of like some of the arguments that, and I go,
well, Leah, that argument might have worked pre-COVID, but during COVID, and I'm not going to say anything about who received the money, but our government was throwing $2,000 a month at people. And I'm not saying some people didn't need that money. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, there was billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars thrown at people. And yet you're saying we don't have the money to care for people who actually are in need. Mm-hmm. That's the crazy thing. Like, you know, the argument works before you actually spend the $300 billion during COVID.
We don't have any money, but then all of a sudden.
That was okay to do that. Right. And I'm not saying that there wasn't reasons for that at times. But now you're saying we can't care for vulnerable people. The two just don't come together. I'm sorry. I can't make sense of it.
Yeah. Well, and I'm glad that it's like exposing that a bit, because that is one of the the big arguments is I'd like to stay home and take care of mom or dad. But I really can't do it because I need to keep working and we need to keep the roof over our head. And we can't do that and take care of mom and dad. And their issue is too complex. You know, but to your point earlier, right when we first started the conversation, which is that families really have been broken apart and that there isn't this, it's like the acknowledgement even that the families are broken apart. So what can we do to help to mend that at the end of life?
We lose our humanity when we kill people, you know, and actually killing is easy. So last year, there was 10,064 reported euthanasias in Canada. Now, I say reported because if you read the law, how it works, and you look at the reporting system, how it works, I guarantee you there's under-reporting. You would say, Alex, how do you prove it? I can only prove it because the Quebec report. We live in Canada, so you have a Quebec report, and you've got a Canada report. Quebec's always got its own thing going on, right? But the Quebec report actually is better than the Canadian report because the Quebec report actually shows, in Quebec, they actually have a multiple reporting system, whereas in Canada, the rest of Canada, English Canada, we don't. So in Quebec, you can actually see that there's under-reporting going on. And I don't have to get into all that, but the report shows that there's under-reporting going on. So there's some doctors who forgot to report the death if they killed someone, or they just don't bother reporting. And so that is a serious problem. If you look at the Netherlands, for instance, they keep talking about all these studies they've done. We haven't done any studies into our law yet, but in the Netherlands, they've done studies every 5 years. And so they've always shown that there's somewhere between a 20 and 23% under-reporting rate, meaning the doctor just doesn't report. Belgium's even worse. Belgium, they estimate it's around 40% of the euthanasia deaths are simply not reported. They just don't bother reporting. And there's a whole bunch of doctors. There was an article a couple years ago. This Dr. Cousins was in a newspaper article saying, oh, I do euthanasia. I've never reported a euthanasia because I don't think I need to, because this is a decision between me and the patient. So the law requires me to report, but I've never reported one. So, you know, well, how many deaths have you done? What kind of deaths have you done? Who have you killed by euthanasia? You've never sent in a report, though. Never, never sent in a report. You know, this is the kind of thing. So anyway, getting back to 10,064, our data shows us that we're already at the same rate of euthanasia pretty much as the Netherlands, even though they've been killing for 20 years and we've been doing it for six. So it's been very popular in Canada. And the other thing is we've had, very sadly, in the early days, we had the media almost unanimously promoting euthanasia. So during the whole early time, there was all these stories about all these people with these medical conditions. And the answer to every single one of these stories was, we need euthanasia, we need euthanasia, we need euthanasia. So obviously, when you do that enough, you convince the people that euthanasia is the wonderful thing. It's the way out of our suffering, out of our pain. And so you have, how would you say, set the society up that they're going to be demanding this. Now they're going to want this. This is a wonderful thing. In reality, of course, when you actually get to the situation, you get the opposite reality that, in fact, we're killing people pretty quickly here in Canada and for reasons that we would have never imagined. So now we're getting all these stories coming up in the media. You've seen the stories. I've seen the stories. A woman who is 51 years old, who's got multiple chemical sensitivities in Toronto, who dies by euthanasia. Now think about this. She has no health conditions to cause her death. She's not dying in any way. But that's okay because Bill C-7, which was passed in March of 2021, took away the requirement that someone actually be dying. So what does she have? She's got multiple chemical sensitivities. She's living in social housing. She's unable to find a job because she reacts so strongly with hives and the rest of, you know, all breaking out from different chemicals, you know, around her. So if you're cleaning your apartment with a certain chemical and she's your neighbor, she's reacting to it. She's saying, I can't live like this. Well, what's the answer to multiple chemical sensitivities? It's a clean place to live. Somebody with MCS can't live in social housing, one of those big apartment buildings with, 200 apartments for poor people. She can't live there because there's no way there's going to be no chemicals in that building that she is not sensitive to. She said, you know, I couldn't keep this up anymore. I was living in my bedroom and I couldn't go out. I couldn't go out because I would just react. It was too much. She needed a clean place to live. We killed her because she needed a clean place to live. That's insanity. I'm sorry, it's insanity. Call it what you want. It's insanity. But, you know, that story had erupted in all these other stories coming out. Then there was a story soon after of a woman who was 31 with multiple chemical sensitivities who had been approved for MAID. She was approved. She ended up not dying because a group of people involved with the MCS community started a GoFundMe page. I promoted that GoFundMe page. I hope some of our donors donated to it. And there was enough money raised that she has found a clean place to live. So she's alive today. But, you know, this is craziness, but that's just the tip of the iceberg, you know. The tip of the iceberg, people with disabilities who are dying by euthanasia, not because they want to die by euthanasia, but to say, I'm living in total poverty. I'm living in total poverty. Now, some of that relates back to the post-COVID era because we've had high inflation. So life was really, really hard. Really, really hard before. But when your cost of living has gone way up and you only get X amount of dollars and most of that money goes towards your rent, some of them are saying, well, I only have $80 a month for food. And now with the increased costs and everything going up, I have no money at all. I have no money at all. They get approved for MAID. Now, why? Because the law changed saying all you needed is a chronic condition. Well, all people with disabilities have these chronic conditions. Right. They all do. They all qualify. So we got a law that allows everyone in our country with a disability to qualify to be killed. And then we don't call it eugenic because that's the word we forgot. And we say, oh, that's Nazi. I'm saying it's not Nazi. No, it's just, no, you're wrong. It's wrong. It's horrible. It's horrific. But we have it because we think this is justice. We think this is progressive. What's progressive about killing people with disabilities? I don't know. I can't figure it out. I don't know. Maybe you know something I don't know. I don't know what it is. So then you're seeing all these articles in the newspaper, people who are poor, people with treatable conditions. I can't seem to get treatment. Why is that? Well, isn't it sad they can't get treatment? Some of it's because of the backlog post-COVID, such a backlog in treating people. Some of it's just because the physicians look at them differently. We advocate really heavily that people have a patient advocate with them. We say to people, you know, if you've got a disability or you're quite elderly or you have a serious health condition and you want to live and you want to receive treatment that's beneficial to you, I'm not talking about extraordinary means. I'm not talking about bankrupting our medical system. I'm talking about, you know, treatment that's beneficial to me. I said, you need to have an advocate with you. And it's not because doctors and nurses are horrible. They tend to be type busy. It's because they don't know you. they don't know you. They look at you walking in there thinking, oh, what am I going to do with you? You seem to have multiple health issues. If I prescribe an analgesic, do you think they're going to leave me alone? Painkiller, right? If I just give them this, maybe I can give them that and they'll say, oh, I'll give you vitamins, whatever, or I'll give you this and you'll feel better. Before you know it, they're taking 10 drugs a day. They might feel a little better, but it's not doing it. What they need is actual proper care and treatment. You need an advocate. That's what you need. And that's what we're really advocating for in a big way. Also, we need to visit people. There's an awful lot of loneliness in this culture. I hate to say it. A lot of loneliness. I live in a small town. So, you know, it seems to be a little bit of a different cultural ethos than in the big city. But nonetheless, you know, there's a lot of people who live in these big, big apartment buildings that have no idea who their neighbor is. And yet that person is very lonely. Very, very lonely. They might have had children. But none of those children live in that city anymore. So they're all in different places in the world. You know, we're a highly, wealthy society where we can get work almost anywhere. So somebody might live in Toronto, but have none of their kids live in Toronto. They might have a few friends, but some of those friends might have passed away. Someone's health condition might have changed where they've lost their mobility or they're semi-immobile. So they're having difficulty getting around. So they almost talk to nobody every single day. And then you start wondering, why are people demanding euthanasia? Well, then they have a health condition and they're thinking, I can't live like this.
Yeah.
And they're lonely, right? They need a friend. They need someone talking to them. They need someone to be with them. They're a human being. Right. You know, being human means we interconnect with people. That's how we tick. You don't have to be religious to believe that we are, you know, interdependent beings, because we are. Just look around yourself.
To know that. We're out of time, Alex. Where can people find more information about the Euthanasia Coalition, Prevention Coalition? And I think part of it, the value that you bring really is that you have lots of really excellent blogs that people can read and then question their own thinking, which is really part of how we come back to being human, is going, where did I start to accept that it was okay to do these things to myself or think about doing this to myself? And how do I unwrap myself from that?
We're very easy to find. Euthanasia Prevention Coalition, you can Google us. We come up very easily. And as for my blog, you'll notice on the left-hand side of the website, there's certain articles. You click on it. We just had put up a new website, and I actually just need a box that says on it, blog, and then you click on it or something, make it nice and easy. Or you just Google the blog, it comes up. We get thousands of hits, similar to you, that you get thousands of downloads and thousands of hits. We get thousands and thousands of hits. When you're getting thousands of hits, it's easy to find us. You just Google us. Yes. But it's epcc.ca or it's epcblog.org. Very easy to find, not so bad. So epcc.ca or epcblog.org. And as for the reality of the culture, you know, we really need to go back to a support for caring for people. We need to be about others. It makes us a better person, makes us happier in our own lives, but it also changes the world for others. I always say to people, I can't change the world, but I can change the world around me. That's all I can do. I know that. So you may say, oh, Alex is doing this stuff all throughout the world. Well, I'm trying to change the world around me, but maybe I've expanded the world around me a little bit, but nonetheless.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with our audience. Everyone, love yourselves, love each other, mind your minds. That's all for us. Bye for now.
Thank you for being a part of our program today. Master Your Life is a presentation of Leah Mattinson Enterprises, Inc. Join us next time on Master Your Life, helping you to discover the very best of you.